This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
In late March 2020, the US FDA issued FDA guidance on conduct of clinical trials of medical products during COVID-19 public health emergency, guidance for industry, investigators, and institutional review boards. FDA Deputy Commissioner for Medical and Scientific Affairs, Dr. Anand Shah, in the agency statement accompanying this release, stated, quote, FDA released this guidance to emphasize that at all times, patient safety should continue to be at the forefront of considerations. We want to support the continuance of these clinical trials in compliance with good clinical practice and minimizing risks to trial integrity while also safeguarding the health and well-being of study participants, end of quote. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. Today, we are fortunate indeed to be joined by Dr. Anand Shah, who will help us learn more about this guidance and the conduct of clinical trials in the time of COVID-19. Thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Shah, and welcome.
Alberto, thanks for having me.
Let me start by asking about the language and tone of the guidance. To my reading, they suggest that the agency has a degree of increased flexibility and tolerance with regard to clinical trials conducted in this age of COVID-19. Is that the agency's intent?
Alberto, this is absolutely the case. We're communicating there is flexibility in our regulatory framework to accommodate the changes in conduct that we articulate in the guidance. So it's not as if we're changing our regulations, but instead we're communicating how to adapt the conduct of clinical trials in response to COVID-19 and continue to meet our expectations for patient safety and data integrity. So challenges may arise, for example, from self-isolation, site closures, travel limitations, interruptions to the supply chain for the investigational product, or other considerations such as if site personnel or trial subjects become infected with COVID-19. And these challenges may lead to difficulty in meeting protocol-specified procedures, including the administration or use of the investigational product, or adhering to protocol-mandated visits in laboratory or diagnostic testing. At the agency, we understand the absolute critical importance of human subject protections in clinical trial integrity, and we issued guidance early on during this emergency to address both.
Drilling a little deeper, what considerations in the guidance itself will help sponsors simultaneously protect the rights of trial participants and the integrity of clinical data?
FDA is actively continuing its efforts to provide the clarity needed to help ensure the safety and rights of clinical trial participants, maintain compliance with good clinical practices, and minimize risk to trial integrity during the pandemic by working hand in hand with sponsors and stakeholders. It's paramount that any decision regarding conducting clinical trials should be made to ensure that the safety of the trial participants can be maintained. Sponsors, in consultation with the investigators and institutional review boards, should assess whether the protection of a patient's safety, welfare, and rights are best served by continuing a study participant in the trial as per the protocol, modify the protocol to minimize risk, such as by using telemedicine wherever possible, or by discontinuing the administration or use of the investigational product, or even participation in the trial. Alberto, such decisions will depend on the specific circumstances, including the nature of the investigational product, the ability to conduct appropriate safety monitoring, the potential impact on the product supply chain, and the nature of the disease under study in the trial. And in the guidance, we make it clear that it may be appropriate for medications that are normally taken at home to be mailed directly to the participant so they don't need to come to the trial site to obtain product. And recognizing the FDA guidance on clinical trial conduct on March 30th, the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy tweeted that their organization was working with state boards of pharmacy to allow these shipments. In the guidance, we also address continuing administration of medical products that are administered in healthcare settings through home administration or at alternate infusion sites, including administration by the patient's local provider. For example, their local oncologist, provided that the physician has the appropriate experience. The guidance speaks to conducting safety assessments using remote technology. It also provides guidance on remote capture of endpoints, such as the performance outcomes and clinician-reported outcome assessments using remote technology. And to maintain data integrity, our guidance reminds sponsors of the need to document the changes that are being made and how COVID-19 impacted the collection of data from participants at the individual participant and trial site. And finally, it's critical to determine whether the conduct of the trial could interfere with public health measures implemented to control the virus and to keep participants informed.
Happy to see that you've already started down the road of decentralized trials, if I may call them that, as many people are. As we know, clinical trial monitoring has become very complex these days, very challenging due to travel restrictions, and of course, the difficulty of accessing clinical sites that may be partially or totally closed. People are saying that as many as 70 to 90% of clinical sites now are no longer available for monitoring for a while, at least. So the virtual approach to study monitoring appears to be allowed by the guidance. Correct me if I'm wrong. So when would the virtual approach to clinical trials be appropriate? And conversely, when would it not be appropriate in FDA's opinion?
Alberto, sponsors should certainly evaluate whether alternative methods for safety assessments, for example, phone contact, virtual visit, alternate location for assessment, including local labs or imaging centers, could be implemented, you know, when necessary and feasible, and would be sufficient to ensure the safety of trial participants. Sponsors should also determine if in-person visits are necessary to fully assure the safety of trial participants. For example, to carry out procedures necessary to assess safety or the safe use of the investigational product. This assessment could include consideration of whether it's appropriate to delay some assessments of ongoing trials, or if the study cannot be properly conducted under the existing protocol, whether to stop administration of the product or even withdraw the patient from the trial. With regard to remote participant follow-up visits, the increasing use of telemedicine really represents a potential alternative. The investigator or study personnel who will conduct remote visits should be trained on how to conduct real-time electronic interactions. These are certainly different, and procedures should be put in place to maintain a trial participant's privacy, you know, as you would for any in-person clinical visit. As noted, you know, we provide guidance on considerations, you know, for conducting performance outcomes using remote technology, and sponsors can also contact the review divisions at FDA regarding any proposals to change clinical trial conduct.
We'll get to an even more specific question. What should sponsors do, for example, when an IRB is not available due to a COVID-19 impact and restrictions, and a protocol modification or deviation requires IRB approval, or at least it would, according to the usual GCP requirements? What's a sponsor to do in those situations?
We haven't heard of an IRB not being available, although we appreciate that there very well could be an impact on their operations due to the ongoing public health crisis. Our regulations permit IRBs to meet remotely, to use consultants to provide specialized expertise, and allow an IRB to rely on another IRB to review its trials. So we're very flexible there. Sponsors and clinical investigators are encouraged to engage with their IRBs as early as possible when urgent or emergent changes to the protocol or informed consent are anticipated as a result of COVID-19. Although changes in a protocol are typically not implemented before review and approval by the IRB and in some cases by FDA, changes to the protocol or investigational plan to minimize or eliminate immediate hazards or to protect the life and well-being of research participants, such as limiting exposure to COVID-19, may be implemented without IRB approval or before filing an amendment to the investigational new drug or investigational device exemption, but these changes are required to be reported afterwards. And we're encouraging sponsors and investigators to work with their IRBs proactively to define procedures to prioritize reporting of any deviations that may impact the safety of trial participants.
I wonder about this increased latitude that FDA appears to be granting sponsors at this time. And again, you'll correct me if I'm using the wrong term, but my question has to do with how does FDA want to be kept informed by sponsors for the foreseeable future? The basis of that is perhaps a concern that FDA may be distracted by the priorities related to COVID-19, so much so that it may be willing to wait for the end of the pandemic before it catches up with decisions made by sponsors on thousands of clinical trials occurring during the pandemic. So is the agency allowing now sponsors a wider latitude than normal to do what sponsors think is best, provided that whatever they do is properly documented in study files, the clinical study reports, etc.? How does the agency want to be kept informed, and when and how often and how much?
Alberto, we're absolutely committed to protecting the health and safety of clinical trial participants, and changes in clinical trial conduct can be made through deviations and documented at the trial site. Deviations are reviewed by the IRB and, if needed to protect against imminent harm, can be put into effect immediately and reported to the IRB afterwards. We're encouraging sponsors to prioritize reporting of deviations that may impact the safety of trial participants. And for changes that are implemented for the protocol as a whole versus a subset of participants, a protocol amendment should be sent to FDA. And we're recognizing that during this rapidly evolving pandemic, a sequence of changes may be needed to address those circumstances. Consolidating several protocol modifications into a single protocol amendment would be acceptable, but should be done expeditiously. And we're working to provide industry with appropriate flexibility to protect participants while adhering to regulations. And just an example here of such flexibility, the guidance describes how FDA intends to exercise flexibility without sponsors needing to seek a waiver of investigational labeling requirements in specific circumstances. Mm-hmm. When a participant is unable to receive the study drug from the trial site, but the product is otherwise FDA approved for other uses. And, you know, I want to emphasize that the vast majority of FDA staff are teleworking at this time, often overtime, and FDA continues to monitor clinical trials closely, and we're working with sponsors to ensure the safety of participants and in the integrity of the trials.
Given the rapidly multiplying priorities around the pandemic, can you tell us how stretched does the agency feel at this point?
The agency is firing on all pistons. We have exercised flexibilities within our own processes. We want to make sure that our regulatory purview is fully executed, and we're really striving hard to minimize any disruptions to regular agency operations.
Going back to the guidance for a moment, what considerations in the guidance will help ensure that patients who participate in clinical trials and prefer to continue participating continue to feel safe and get the care they need? Patients with cancer may still be very interested in participating in cancer trials of new oncology agents, for example, and not be excluded or discouraged by the presence of the pandemic. Anything in the guidance that addresses this kind of concern on the part of patients with other non-viral diseases, shall we say?
So we're taking our responsibility to protect participants, you know, very seriously, whether those are patients in studies around anti-infectives, as you mentioned, patients undergoing or on cancer clinical trials. And really, it's paramount that any decision regarding the conduct of these clinical trials ensure that the safety of participants can be maintained. And we are closely monitoring all clinical trials within the purview of the agency, and we're in discussion with sponsors if protocols need to be changed and adapted.
And finally, Dr. Shah, final question. What have you seen to date that in the future will help sponsors, investigators, regulators, and patients be better prepared for any future pandemic that may impact clinical trials?
Well, Alberto, I mean, just given how rapidly the COVID-19 pandemic has evolved, we are recommending that sponsors, clinical investigators, IRBs, be as proactive as possible and consider establishing and implementing policies and procedures or revise existing policy and procedures to describe approaches to be used to protect their participants and manage study conduct during possible disruption of their studies. So changes to policies and procedures could address, but really not limited to, impact on the informed consent process, study visit and procedures, data collection, study monitoring, adverse event reporting. And we intend to update the guidance as needed and encourage the research community to submit questions and recommendations to our COVID-19 clinical trial mailbox so that we can assist as quickly as possible. That email address is clinicaltrialconduct-covid19@fda.hhs.gov. And we'll certainly consider lessons learned during the COVID-19 pandemic to prepare for possible future whole-scale disruptions or pandemics and for potentially making changes to routine operating procedures at some point going forward.
And finally, truly finally, many people in all walks of life are now thinking, well, we'll just never go back to the way things were. Specifically in the regulatory ecosystem, do you see us going back to the way things were 6 months ago, or are we getting to implementing and adopting and liking new practices, including maybe virtual meetings, virtual inspections, to the point where we'll just not go back because we would like the new realities potentially.
Albert, I'm fairly confident that in the near future, we will return to some sense of normalcy. It may not be a light switch. It may be more like a sunrise, right? And we'll see gradual return to our normal procedures and operations as an agency. We have learned a lot of lessons and we continue to learn about some potential durable changes that we may be able to make with respect to flexibilities. But again, our primary objective here is to protect study participants, to maintain the integrity of the clinical trial process. And we look forward to working, you know, with the research community and with the patient community together to see which of these changes could be made more durable on an ongoing basis.
Thank you, Dr. Shah, very much for your time, insights, and communication to us today. Wishing you very good luck with your important work and the work of the agency.
Alberto, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.